Hey guys, I'm Joe, I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Joe.
It's good to see y'all again. So, I'm sad, I'm not going to be here. But I might be here next week, I just won't be talking as much, hopefully. You know. So, trying to think kind of where we left off. We went into wives and we took a look at the nuggets that were in there that could be used for working with newcomers and little sponsorship directions. And like I might add, all the rest of those remaining chapters are the same. You know, we can find directions in the family afterwards. We can find it into employers and in a vision for you. If we're looking, you know, the first week I was here, I shared my experience up until I had finally hit bottom, and what that looked like was total destruction of self-reliance. Like every way that I had ever tried to stay sober for good, right? Because I could stay sober for periods of time, I just couldn't stay sober for good, had all failed. You know, I tried every which way imaginable that I could come up with, and I failed every time, and I got to this like broken, hopeless state, and things started to change, is what it was. Like things started opening up to me that I had never been able to hear, or maybe I was just unwilling to hear up until that point. And so from there, what I did was I called up my sponsor, who used to be my sponsor, so I know it wasn't his fault because he's currently my sponsor. And I asked him, I called him and I said, Fred, I need help and I'm willing to do anything you tell me to do. You know, I was still drinking at the time. And he said, all right, well, I'm going to have this guy, Eric, come and pick you up and take you to a meeting tonight. And I was like, but I'm drinking. And he said, yeah, that's okay. And I said, okay. And from there, I went to that meeting. That was the night of my last drink. And the next day was my first day sober. I hooked up with him, I believe, that weekend. And, you know, I set the stage is set as far as I'm just in this hopeless condition, seemingly hopeless. You know, I tried to kill myself. I failed at that. I had an adverse reaction to the stuff I took. And ended up waking up instead of going to sleep. I was so beat. I had done AA, you know, in my mind. So I figured that didn't work, but I was willing to try anything. And I went to his house, and we sat down, and we started talking about alcoholism like I do with the guys I sponsor. And he asked me, what does it mean to be alcoholic? And, you know, I came up with what I thought it was to be alcoholic, like, you know, the things I've heard in meetings, one's too many, a million's never enough. Like, that's kind of what I said. And then he said, he said, what does it mean to be alcoholic? He asked me again, you know. And I said, once I start, I can't stop. And he said, yeah, well, that's part of it. And I said, well, what do you mean? You know, and it's the same thing I do when I sit down with guys. They tell me what they think it means to be alcoholic, and I usually end up telling them that has nothing to do with alcoholism whatsoever, right? It's like, you know, I lost everything, because that's where I was, man. A couple years before that, I was making a couple $1 million a year. I had the biggest house in my town. I was driving supercars, had a wife, kids, girlfriend, you know, like I had everything I thought that would make me happy. And I lost all that. So I said, being alcoholic is drinking to the extent that you lose all that. And he says, yeah, that has nothing to do with alcoholism. And he finally got me to a place where I was like, well, what is it? And he went through this book and he explained it to me. You know, he explained the physical allergy to alcohol that once I start, not all the time, but at certain times when I start drinking, I can't stop drinking, right? And he asked me to give him some examples of that. And I did. I told him about, I told you guys about my marriage, you know, the day I got married and how I planned on only having a couple, and I got bombed and destroyed the whole wedding. And countless other times. You know, I told them about, you know, the time that I was going to get fired if I didn't show up to work on time the next day, and I stayed up drinking all night and didn't show up to work the next day and got fired. Like, all those times that I had planned on just having a few and went overboard and had way too many. He said, yeah, he says, that's the physical allergy to alcohol. He says, that's part of being alcoholic. No non-alcoholic has that. He says, non-alcoholics, they can get drunk whenever they want to. They can make it. They can wake up one morning and they can say, tonight's Friday night and I'm going out with my friends and we're going to get bombed and I'm going to hook up with some girls and some guys and I'm going to have a grand old time. And they can follow through with that decision, with the proper action, and get drunk. And then they can also plan on going out for just two, because they have a good reason to only have two, like pick up their kids or get to work the next day or whatever the case may be, and they will always only have two. And then he said, alcoholics can do that sometimes. The problem is we can't do it all the time. And we usually can't do it at the worst possible time. And my experience abundantly confirmed that. And I was like, holy cow, it was cool, because it was like, it was probably the first time I ever really learned something, because it was the first time I was ever willing to learn. And I heard it, and I got it, and I said, but you said it's two things. What's the other thing? And he talked about the mental obsession. And he talked about how, where it says on page 43, like, if when you honestly want to, you find that you cannot quit entirely. You know, like he explained to me how I'm an expert, just like him, at stopping drinking. Like I told you, like we're all expert. We've stopped 100 times, 1,000 times, some of us before. Our problem is we can't stay stopped. At certain times, I can't bring forth that hairiness and that misery of the past to keep me from that first drink. And that's what it looked like when I picked up after 7.5 years in the fellowship of AA. It was kind of like I was having an out-of-body experience. I just got out of my car. No reason. Like, I just got out of my car, walked into a bodega, 7 years sober after going to 2,000 AA meetings, went in there, bought a Corona, got back in my car, cracked it, and drank it. Mental obsession, right? It's beyond human power, beyond my mental capacity. Like, I didn't, even after I drank, I was like, what did I just do? And I asked myself, right, you know, so myself said, you know, you drank, you chose to, and I buy that, you know. That's why when we see a lot of newcomers coming back in, they're all filled with that guilt and that shame and that remorse. And a lot of that has to do with they think that they chose to pick up a drink. And if you're alcoholic, that just ain't so. If you're that non-alcoholic, then yeah, you can choose when you're going to drink and when you're not. But if you're alcoholic, and you've gone to certain lengths, you've crossed into a place where you have lost the power of choice of drink. And when he explained it to me, I broke open. I was like, holy cow. Like, my exact words were, you know, I was probably 10 days sober, but my exact, or 5 days sober, my exact words were, Fred, you mean I'm not retarded?
Yeah.
Because I thought I was alcoholic. I didn't know what that was, but I figured I'm alcoholic / retarded. Like, something else has to be wrong with me, right? Because I thought the physical allergy thing, that's all that has to do with alcoholism. That's what I'm powerless over. But if I put it down, why am I going back? There's got to be something incredibly wrong with me, even after all the stories I've heard. Like, you guys tell some horror, tragic stories. DUIs, killing kids, like... I know if that's, you drink like I drink, and that could possibly be in my future, how can I make a decision to go back? The fact is, I don't. I don't make a decision to go back to drink. And if you're alcoholic, you don't make a decision to go back to drink. We have been talking for the past 3 weeks about working with other alcoholics, planting the seed, following the directions in this book. When I'm dealing with something else that's not alcoholism, I need to be careful how I use this book, right? If you're an alcoholic and a dope fiend, right, I shouldn't be using the directions in this book to tell you, hey, go out and try to shoot dope like a normal dope fiend. Like, you know, like, I need to be careful what I'm doing here, right? As a recovered alcoholic and an upstanding member in Alcoholics Anonymous, I work with other alcoholics. Like, that's what I do. I don't mix and match. Like, if your problem is not alcoholism, I can't follow this direction and help you at the same time, because it's not for that. It's not for that. And the traditions are very clear on that. I want to go to page 9, because I did that. The reason I'm talking about it is because I did it. Because I had a guy a few years ago that I was working with, and alcohol was not his problem. He could pick it up and put it down whenever he wanted to, but he was a dope fiend. He was shot heroin. And I kind of took the directions from the book and used it with him, ignoring that fact. And he did. He went out and he shot dope, and on the second night he died, 22 years old. Right? Discernment, right? Good judgment. These are things we're supposed to be using in the fellowship of AA. Like, we're playing with people's lives here. We've got to be careful what we're doing. I hope no one else has to learn the hard way the things that I've learned. So let's see what the planting the seed looks like from Bill's story, you know. Let's see what kind of seed Abby planted in Bill, right? On page 9 in the second paragraph. The door opened and there he stood, fresh skinned and glowing. Is that the person that I'm, is emulating the right word? Is that the person I am in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous? Am I fresh skinned and glowing? Like, do I come off that way to newcomers? Or do I come off as miserable and depressed? You know, like, just a question I ask myself. There was something about his eyes. Is there something about my eyes? He was inexplicably different. What had happened, right? Like, just by looking at, because he knew him. Like, these people don't know us, but, you know, if they're new and they're walking in. But he knew him. He's like, what is this? Like, he wanted to understand it. So he says he pushed a drink across the table. Abby refused it. He didn't say, oh my God, I got to call my sponsor and go to a meeting. No, like, he wasn't in fear of alcohol. Mm-hmm. Right? He refused it. Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had got into this fellow. He wasn't himself. Something was different about him, right? He talks about it later. He was on a different footing. Come, what's it all about? I queried. He looked straight at me simply, but smiling, and said, I got religion. Because he did. He was in the Oxford group. That's what he got. I was aghast. So that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot. Now I suspect a little bit cracked about religion. And then, you know, like, we'll go into working with others, and it talks about how to avoid that reaction, right? Like, we don't shy away from spiritual matters if we think it's going to serve a good purpose, but if, you know, someone is, we don't want to antagonize people with God. He says, okay, so now I suspect, right? He had a starry-eyed look. Yes, the old boy was on fire, all right, but bless his heart, right? Bill's drinking. He's like, you know, let him rant. Besides, my gin would last longer than his preaching. But he did no preaching. So, like, another question I ask myself, like, when I'm talking to new guys, like, am I preaching to them? Am I telling them, oh, this is what you got to do, and you got to do this? You know, I've looked at my, and I don't do it, you know, but I can, if I don't watch what I'm doing, be perceived that way, you know? In a matter-of-fact way, he told how two men had appeared in court persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. They had told him of a simple religious idea, spiritual idea, and a practical program of action. That was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. It worked, right? So, Ebby gets... not 12, 6 steps, whatever you want to call it, right? By these two guys, and then 2 months later, he's working with Bill. Right? Mm-hmm. Don't take forever. not if you're willing. He had come to pass his experience along to me, if I cared to have it, right? If I cared to have it. For a long time, like, you know, not for a long time, but maybe for my first year, I'm telling people, this is what you got to do. Like, you got to work the steps. And maybe they don't. Like, maybe they're not like me. Maybe I don't know anything about them. Maybe I'm not shutting up long enough for them to tell me something about them. You know, it's a... He says, certainly I was interested. I had to be, for I was hopeless. He talked for hours. Childhood memories arose. I could hear the sound of the preacher's voice. Where are we going? Hold on. As I sat on still Sundays over there on the mount, on the hillside, there was the preferred temperance pledge I took, right? So he's thinking back to the times he said he wasn't going to drink. My grandfather's good-natured contempt kept some contempt of some church folks and their doings. His insistence of the spheres really had their music, but the denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen. You know, before I came into AA, and even when I was in AA for those first, well, it wasn't as bad as it used to be, but before, at 24 years old when I came into AA, like, I would, if I, there was a church, like, if I was walking this way and there was a church on this side, I would cross the street. And it wasn't that I didn't believe in God, it was more that maybe I do, and if I do, and he knows all the stuff that I've been doing, right, so I'm just going, right, out of sight, out of mind, so he won't see me across the street, you know, it's like, of course he will, but in my mind, he wouldn't. I had always believed in a power greater than myself. I had often pondered these things. I was not an atheist, for few people really are. That means blind faith in a strange proposition that the universe originated in a cipher aimlessly and rushes nowhere. My intellectual heroes, the chemists, the astronomers, and even the evolutionists suggested vast laws and forces at work. When he explained alcoholism to me, and I really got it, and he asked me to use those qualifying questions to qualify myself, because that's really what he did. Like, he didn't tell me I was alcoholic. He explained to me what the nature of alcoholism is and what it means to be alcoholic, and then he asked me to tell him if I was it through my experience. And I abundantly confirmed that to him, and I was like, oh my God, like, after I said, you mean I'm not retarded? He says, no, dummy, you're alcoholic. And I said, well, what do I have to do? Like, that's the experience. What do I have to do? And he said, step two. Like, and that's how it went for me. Like, I was fully convinced. And once I became fully convinced and I had tried every other thing, like, when I went to page 30 and it says we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholic, fully conceded. Fully conceded. I know I'm alcoholic. It's the only thing that makes sense in the light of what he just explained to me. So what do I have to do? He said, take step two. I said, how do I do that? He says, we're gonna talk about step three. We're gonna make a decision to stop doing things your way. Right? Stop doing the things that you wanna do and start doing the things that you don't wanna do. He says, if you keep doing the things you wanna do, they're gonna keep bringing you back to the place that you are. You know, if you continue to not do the things that you don't want to do, same thing. It's going to bring you back to the place you are, where you want to die and you think your kids are better off in this world without you and you're a bum, you know? So he says, if you don't want to have that life experience no more, we got to do something different. And I said, okay. And we got down and we said a prayer and I started going through inventory. I had to go to jail first for a little while. I told you guys about that. You know, I got out of this rehab after 44 days and after 21 days with 44 days sober. And I told him about the charges I had in the state of Oregon. And he told me I got to go back and face them. And I said, okay. And I saved up my money. And I was facing my 4th to 5th DUI over there in the state of Oregon. And I I got honest with the judge. She took pity on me and gave me 60 days instead of, like, she could have gave me probably 6 years, 7 years. And what I did was, I really identify with Bill and his experience, like how immediately he wanted to go from the hospital and help other people. Like, that's exactly what I wanted to do. Like, when I got locked up for those 60 days, my thing was like, how can I go help people in jail? Like, how can I? I found out that 93% of people in jail are either alcoholics or drug addicts. Like, so I can help people, and I did that. I walked into jail and had 89 days sober, and I started talking about AA, and I started talking about the experience I was having in the program of AA, and I would write out how it works, and I would write out the promise, anything that I could remember, and these guys would. I would write it out for them on a napkin, and they would glue it to their bunk or bubble gum it to their bunk, and we would talk about AA. It was awesome. It was like a really cool experience. Like, I don't recommend going there, but it was fun. And when I got out, we got right back into the fourth step, and we did a fifth step, and it was like mind-blowing, just like the first step. Like, I found out the truth about myself for the first time. I was like, oh, my God. It's so clear. I am the cause of everything. You know, it's this is the message that we carry. This is the message that I carry. This is the AA message. And this is the message that Bill, Ebby was carrying to Bill. Freedom, peace, hope, strength through his experience. This is the actions I took with this Oxford group. This is the experience I have. I am this person that you stand in front of saying that I have a starry-eyed look and I'm different. I can't explain it. It just is. Let's move on a little bit. Let's pass this. So the seed was planted already in Bill, right? Ebby had got that across. He got that there's a... Not only he's identifying with the problem, he knows that he's alcoholic, there's a solution to it if you're willing to do some stuff. And Bill wasn't ready to do some stuff, right? Bill was like, you know, pretty much, I got this. Just like we hear all the time with newcomers. Maybe you got to do that. Like, I'm just going to make meetings and I'll be fine. You know, one on Tuesday, one on Thursday, and I'm good to... And that's okay. Like, that's a part of my journey. I had to do that too. Who am I to deprive you of your journey? Right? All of that got me here, where I was finally able to get free. And I'm getting freer and freer all the time. It's pretty cool. So he planted the seed. And on let's go to page 13. 12, I'm sorry. Where he says, my friend suggested what seemed a novel idea. Here's another seed, right? Like, are we preaching sectarian religion on people? Like, you know, when I share something from a podium or in a meeting, if I need to take the next 5 minutes to explain what I shared, maybe I shouldn't talk about it in a meeting. You know what I'm saying? Like, I hear people, I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I'm recovered because of blah, 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 blah. Okay, great, right? But, you know, if I need to take that amount of time to explain something, maybe I can talk to you about it after the meeting and not waste time. Same thing, right? So it says, my friend suggested what seemed a novel idea. He said, why don't you choose your own conception of God, right? Am I pushing my conception of God on other people? I've been in AA for almost 5 years back and 7 years first. In all those years, I think I've had a conversation about my conception or my understanding of the power that's in my life, maybe twice, like with people in meetings. When I'm sitting down sponsoring guys, maybe a little bit more, but it's few and far between. Like, I'm not ranting. I'm not a religious zealot. Like, I'm not, like, that pushes people away. Right? It might be great, wonderful information, but I'm dealing with somebody who's technically trying to kill themselves on a daily basis. I'm not dealing with the sanest of people. You know, I need to take a look at that. What am I doing? So he said that statement hit me hard. it melted away intellectual mountain of whose shadow I had lived and shivered for many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of to make my beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. Thus I was convinced, right? Let's move over. Oh, no, we can keep going. Let's go on this for a little while because I want to actually. At long last, I felt I believed. Scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. Usually when I get into, like, also as it's suggested in this book, the directions, when I get into this, the second step, working with somebody, whether they have a profound belief in God or not, their ideas, their current ideas, brought them to me. You know, it's not such a great place. You know, it brought them to Alcoholics Anonymous. So mostly what I'm going to talk about in the second step is being willing to give up old ideas based on theory and maybe take some action and have some experience. And then that becomes fact, right? So that's usually what I do with that. The real significance of my experience in a cathedral, like we read that earlier, for a brief moment, I needed and wanted God. Like he's at that place. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. And that's the same experience I had in that bathroom. For the first time in my life, I had really prayed. I had really asked for help, and with every fiber of my being, and it came. Right? It took a lot to get me there. It took a lot to get me there. And who am I to say that you should be there? Should. Like, well, what does that even mean? But soon a sense of his presence has been blotted out by worldly clamors, right? It just happens. If I don't stay active and work on this relationship or these relationships with myself, with God, and with other people, they start to fade. You know, when I start putting other things in front of them, they start to fade. I told you guys maybe, like I started playing pool for a period of time that I was in AA, and when I first started playing, I sucked. I thought I was good. But I wasn't. You know, I was playing bars drunk and dumb, and I never really knew how to play too well, but I thought I was good, and I started going up to pool halls playing pool, and they quickly showed me how much I suck, and they took all my money for a while. And but I played for about 5-6 years, and it got to the point that I was playing pretty much, I was avoiding my life. I had my business running pretty good, and I wasn't really paying attention to my kids, but I was playing a lot of pool, so I was playing probably 5-6 days a week, 10 hours a day. Mm. And as a result of that practice, I got really good. Mm-hmm. I was probably making about 30 grand a year just playing pool. Like, I would never play in bars because it was like taking candy from the baby, from babies. You know, like, I would play in pool halls, tournaments, play with other really good players, play with world-class players, getting weight from them. But as a result of doing it and doing it on a consistent basis, I got really good. It's the same deal here, right? Like, if I'm actively practicing these principles on a regular basis, if I'm actively trying to carry this message to the suffering alcoholic, if I'm active in meditation and prayer, if I'm staying on top of my inventory, I'm going to be able to help a new guy. If I'm not, and I start getting blocked by calamity or pomp or worship of other things or business or just crap that comes into my life, I'm less likely to be of maximum use to someone else. Just simple. It's fact. It's a human condition. That's just how we are. So he says at the hospital, right, he's talking, he's sharing his experience in a general way, what he used to be like, what happened, so what happened right now, what he's like after that. At the hospital, he was separated from alcohol for the last time. Treatment seemed wise, for he showed signs of DTs. And there, at the hospital, he humbly offered himself to God as he understood him, to do with him as he would. I placed myself under his undeservedly care. Placed myself undeservedly under his care and direction. I'll get back to that. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without him I was lost. I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend take him away root and branch. Bill's trying to plant a seed with this story, right? Like, what's he talking about here? He's talking about the program, right? Like, what is there? I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood him. What step is that? Step three, right? Okay. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without him I am lost. What's that? Step two? Bit of one, two, right? I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend remove them root and branch, right? Six and seven, right? I have not had a drink since. Right? He wasn't formatted, right? We didn't have the steps yet. But look, here he goes with four and five, right? My schoolmate visited me, right? Abby visited him, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies, mm-hmm. Right? Right. Who wrote Bill's inventory? Did Bill write it? Abby wrote it, right? So Bill's like this, right? I don't write their inventory, but a lot of people like to run on the fourth step. So what we do is, instead of you take a week or 2 weeks and then come back to me with a written fourth step that you, even though I described to you what to do, you still get completely lost because you're just like me, right? And trapped in yourself. You're going to come by my place and I'm going to do some paperwork, but I'm going to give you the direction and you're going to do it. Right, piece by piece, you know, and I found that to work pretty good. Mm-hmm. We made a list of people I had hurt and to whom I felt resentment. Right, step eight and nine, step eight at least. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals, admitting my wrong. Never was I to be critical of them. Like, the way he puts it, it's pretty easy, especially like when you're beat up and broken. That's ninth step, right? Became willing. I was to test my thinking by my new God consciousness within, right? Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking for direction and strength to meet problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my request bore on my usefulness to others, steps 10 and 11, right? He's getting it all across, clearly. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. He said, that's so, like, wait, right? My friend promised me that once these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. Like, that's the program. That's the program of AA. That's where we recover. Now what do? We go help others, right? I don't go help others to recover, right? Like, I get recovered, right? And it does say, when all else fails, work with another alcoholic would save the day. But that's not supposed to be developed as a way of life. Like, I'm not supposed to be working with you because I'm going to die. Right. The rest of the steps, that's where I recover. What am I going to do with it once I do? Then I'm supposed to carry the message. See people, never mention any names, but I see people running around and it's like they're two-stepping stuff, right? Like, I'm going to get it and then pretend to go through the steps or go through them in a triage format where it takes 5 minutes and we're all through 12 steps, and then I'm going to go out and start helping people, and creates a lot of confusion in AA. Then you got people running around relapsing, and they're wondering why. Like, see, with me, I knew. When I came back, like, I knew I didn't work the program. Like, I knew I was just in the fellowship. And I knew the fellowship don't keep you sober for more than 7.5 years. That I knew. But some people, like, you know, they go through this. I don't want to even get into it, because people don't know what I'm talking about. But talk about hopelessness. If you're convinced after you pick up a drink or slip that you've gone through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and then you drank again, kind of screwed, right? So,
right.
So he said, simple but not easy, a price had to be paid. It meant self-destruction. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. Turn all things over to the Father of Light that resides in all of us. I'm going to stop there, and I want to go to this page, because I was looking at this in the car. I'm a crammer. I'm not a studier. So page 142, I just wanted to touch on that for a little bit. 715. So this is to employers. So I figured we had so much fun with it last week. Let's go into some other stuff, right? So it was written to the employers when dealing with alcoholics, but I found a lot of really good direction in this chapter for working with newcomers. So at the bottom of 142, what it says, I started here, it says, after satisfying yourself that your man wants to recover and is willing to go to any extreme to do so, right? There's two qualifying factors there, right? So if he meets those two factors, you may suggest a definite course of action, right? What's the course of action? Right? Program, right? Program of action. For most alcoholics who are drinking or who are just getting over a spree, a certain amount of physical treatment is desirable. I know that alcohol and benzos you can die from if you stop taking them. So what I try to do always when I'm working with a wet drunk is to get them into detox and have them detox safely. Mm-hmm. You know, it also talks about having their brain cleared before you try to take them through this process, the program. Because, like, I've worked with people that were drunk, and I present the program, and they're like, yeah, I'm going to do it. Let's tell you right now. And then the next day, they're like, oh, you know. That's like when you ask me to move when I'm in when you ask me to move you when I'm in a really good mood, and I'm excited. Yeah, I'll be there tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes like, oh, my God. Yo, Adam, can you go move, bro? Like, drinking compounds up times 10. The matter of physical treatment should, of course, be referred to your own doctor. Whatever the method, the object is to thoroughly clear mind and body of any effects of alcohol. In competent hands, this seldom takes long, nor is it very expensive. Your man will fare better if he's placed on such physical condition that he can think straight and no longer craves liquor. Let's just move down. So it says, if your man or woman, right, accepts your offer, it should be pointed out that physical treatment is but a small part of the picture, right? Like, that's what I think when I come into AA. Like, I think if I could just get physically removed from alcohol and just not drink anymore, I'll be fine, right? I don't know if I shared this story with you guys. A few years ago, 2-3 years ago, I took my son. He's 18 now. So he was probably about 14, 15 at the time, and I was speaking at some meeting in Belleville or something like that. And what I was predominantly focused on was this thing that we call the spiritual malady, right? This restless, irritable discontent, the bedevilments on page 52, the four horsemen. And I kind of pawned that off as alcoholism. And what happened was, without talking about the other things, like the physical allergy and the mental obsession, what makes an alcoholic alcoholic. In order to call that other spiritual malady alcoholism, you have to have the... But I didn't talk much about that at the time. And I talked about this spiritual malady that probably every human being on the planet has to some extent, right? Especially like people of extremes, like drug addicts, alcoholics, gamblers, sex addicts, overeaters. We got it bad, right? But I talked about that as being alcoholism. And I, after the meeting, like the kid's never taken a drink. And he says, we were driving home and he was like... He was heavy. And he was like, Dad, I think I'm alcoholic. And I was like, no, kid. You know, like, but it really made me think about what the message is I'm carrying. Right? Like, if I'm pawning off this spiritual malady, this restless irritable, as solely as alcohol, in itself, it's not alcoholism. If I'm alcoholic, it's alcoholism. If I'm a gambler, compulsive gambler, that's some other, that's, I can't call it alcoholism because I ain't alcoholic. If I'm a sex addict and I got that restless irritable discontent, if I don't, you know, do that, then I got to call that something else. But it ain't alcoholism. I can't call it that. I need to be careful of what message it is, right? Because we got a lot of people walking around AA very confused. Like they think they're alcoholic. I heard a lady... few months ago, she says, I never drank, but I have all the isms. So I'm definitely alcoholic. I don't blame her for saying it, but where's she getting that from? You know? It's like, what message are we carrying that she thinks that that's cool? And it makes her a member of Alcoholics Anonymous because she has a desire to stop drinking. In my book, it says that you have to be alcoholic and have a desire to stop drinking to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that stuff gets, you know, they take one sentence out of a whole bunch of literature and then that's it. Anyway, that's a whole other meeting. We ain't going there. But so what it says, right? If your man accepts your offer, it should be pointed out that he goes through the physical treatment. To get over drinking will require a transformation of thought and attitude. Like, this is what it looks like. Not to say that you have to do it or you even want to do it or you're going to do it. This is what we've done. This is what it was required for us to recover. We thought we all had to place recovery above all else, for without recovery, we would have lost both home and business. Like, that's... what I present, if you ask me, you know, like if you come, and I try to build a rapport with guys, like what it looks like when I meet a new person in AA, what it really looks like is I walk up to you and I say, hey, what's up, what's your name, blah, 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 and I say, how long have you been in AA, and they say, 27 days, and I say, in a row, and they say, yeah, and we start having some fun, and I might even talk about, I really don't, but I talk about some stuff, like what you do for work, but I'm not talking about that to know what you do for work. I'm talking about that to loosen you up so that we can get to talk about some deep stuff if you're willing to talk to me, you know, and then we can get to some even better stuff, and maybe you'll ask me to help you, and we'll go and we'll have some fun and get well. But it's all, I try not to speak without purpose. You know, I'm not just going to go, hey, let's talk about the Jets. Like, I'm just, the Jets are not going to help you, you know. Unless you're the Raiders. Maybe they'll help you, you know. Where am I at? 23? Okay. 19 is 7, right? Just kidding. I know that. Okay, so let's just keep going on in this 144. And mind you, like, we haven't really even talked much about working with others, and that's where the real direction is, right? We're just jumping around going to other places, but to plant this seed, the solid directions is in the chapter working with others. And the closer I stick to that, the better chance I'll have at helping someone. You know, it's when I start to do my own thing which I've done again, stay away from this meeting. That's a sick meeting. Mm-hmm. Topic destruction meeting, stay away from those. Go to big book, literature-based meetings. Go to my meeting only. You know, like, now I'm creating even more disharmony. Like, I think in my mind that it serves a purpose and it's to an end, but it's really not. Like, so I always need to check my own motives, too. Where we go? Mm-hmm. Okay. So then it says, if he's willing, right, and he's ready to go, it says, we suggest you draw the book to his attention, the doctor who is to attend your patient during treatment. If the book is read at the moment the patient is able, while acutely depressed, realization of his condition may come to him. We hope the doctor will tell the patient the truth about his condition. It's going to get good here, right? Whatever that happens to be. When the man is presented with this volume, it is best that no one tell him that he must abide by its suggestions. The man must decide for himself, right? When I got to that place, 4.5 years ago, like, I didn't need to be convinced. I didn't need to be convinced about anything. When I was on step 4, I was afraid of step 9, but when I got to step 8, I was ready to take step 9. You know, all of them. Whoever it was. I faced the IRS. I faced some lifelong resentments that I had held on to. A whole bunch of harms, a ton of money stuff. When I got to 8, I knew that I had no choice. A friend of mine, he stole my word. I think he got it from me, but I'll say I got it from him. Because what he says is, anytime you have a problem in the program or with any portion of this program or any portion of AA, it's you have a first step problem. And what that looks like is, I think I have a choice. Right? Like, do I think I have a choice to not develop all 36 principles of Alcoholics Anonymous into my life and incorporate them into my life? Do I think that that's an option for a guy like me? And most days the answer is absolutely not. I know I got to do this stuff, and it becomes really easy. I don't fight. I just do. Then there's other days, right, where I want to stay home. TV, I'm tired. I work on telephone poles all day. I'm a lineman. It's like, I don't want to sit with a guy on Saturday morning. I wake up at 7 every day, you know. And even when those times come, it's like, who am I? I'm not fooling myself. Like, I go through the motions sometimes. Like, if I'm not well, I'll go through. But I always do it anyway, because I know I must. I'm an alcoholic. Like, for me, it's life. I want to die. Like, I wasn't one of those guys that came in with, like, you know, wasn't like the honorable thing for me to do is come into AA and take, like, if I didn't, I was going to die. I was absolutely going to die in a matter of months, maybe days. I don't know. So I don't know what that means. It's 1927. For people like me, it's 727, right? Thank you guys for listening to me. I'm gonna stop.
Thank you.